Are you ready to rumble?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Geek Brunch Retrocast. All the way live from the 25th century. My name is Keith Knutson.
And I'm Daryl Taylor.
Yes. And we are rocking out like nobody's business.
That's good music. I need to get that on my iPhone. It actually sounds like music you'd hear at a hockey ring or something, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's pretty catchy.
It makes me want to like smash shit and punch people.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I feel violent. I want to swipe my fist across the row of colored circles and knock on glass cylinders with sticks.
It makes me want to steal a spacecraft.
Yeah.
And go joyriding.
And just go crazy.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
They were driving like drunk drivers, man.
They were cruising. USA. 2099. Something like that. It's the Geek Brunch Retrocast, episode 40-something.
Yes, 40-something. And we're here to talk some Buck Rogers.
Yes.
Space Rockers.
Mm-hmm. I think this might have had some of the most recognizable guest stars.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is we've had two people from Night Court.
Yeah. Oh, wait, what was the other one?
Richard Mole and what's her name?
From this one.
Right. In the past, Marky Post.
Marky Post, yes, you're right. That's...
Yeah.
I totally forgot that when watching this, though.
Marky Post aged better.
Yeah, it was weird seeing Richard Mole with hair.
Yeah. That's bizarre.
Yeah, Marky Post. How old is she now? 63. Holy cow. She's older than.
She's looking good, though. She's maintaining her beautiful looks.
Yep.
So is Richard Mole.
Marking her posts.
That's right.
So, how's it going?
It's going well.
Did you have a good weekend?
It is going very good. I watched a lot of TV. I didn't read as many comic books as I'd like, but I did watch a lot of freaking TV.
How many episodes of Arrow did you watch this weekend?
I think 5. I watched Friday. Because I got off work early, and I said, I'm going to watch Buck Rogers to get so I don't have to watch that on Saturday. And I watched that. And then I said, oh, Barb's not here yet. I think I'll watch some Arrows. And then just accumulated. I couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those adrenaline rushes of Arrow. So I got all the way through Birds of Prey, and which I think is episode 16, maybe. Maybe 16 or 17. So I'm getting close because I think there's 23 or 24 episodes. I can't remember.
I think both seasons had 23.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I like the show, so I don't mind, but I'm definitely become a fan of the shorter TV seasons.
I am a fan of the shorter ones because it seems like I could watch more of them. Burst, and it keeps like my adrenaline and excitement up for the next one. But yeah, I like to marathon when they have a bunch of them, so it's kind of nice to watch them when you don't have to watch them like when they come out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I kind of prefer watching TV that way, but there's some shows I kind of want to keep up with some of the DC stuff once I catch up. We'll see how it goes. I mean, my weekend was kind of similar. Obviously, I watched Buck Rogers also, and I also watched it on Friday. And then I thought about it, but I ended up just waiting for Arrow Season 2 to get added to streaming on Netflix, Because you and I, we pretty much had the same experience of the show so far. Like, both of us were initially not into it, and then we both got hooked and are working on catching up.
It's such a soap opera, though. I mean, but
Yeah.
once you're hooked, it like latches onto you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I feel like the first couple episodes of season one had some of the highest levels of CW-ness in
Yeah.
it or something. I mean, it definitely is, but most shows like this, I mean, are most serial shows are soap opery, but I just got invested in the characters, you know. So,
Yes, so
and they started, but they have definitely over time, second half of the first season started pulling a lot more DC universe stuff.
I.
I thought so.
What else did you watch? You said you were watching something else.
Did I? Well, I mean, I watched
Oh,
like
the
so I.
Arrow and Buck Rogers. You had a similar. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Because I started from episode one. I think it got added like Thursday or something like that to Netflix. So I watched same amount of episodes. I think I'm like four and a half. I gotta finish one. But I'm liking. It's funny because I was thinking about this morning for whatever reason. It's interesting how, like, for us, the excitement is seeing DC properties being used that we're familiar with. So when a character named Sebastian Blood gets introduced, we know what that means. So it does remove some of the anticipation. You know,
But
obviously.
there's also like all those little, oh, we're gonna, oh, these paintings were done by Carrie Bates. I'm like,
Yeah.
fucking, I mean, there's
Yeah,
just
like
like
little Easter
call-outs, like
eggs.
Easter eggs, like we're on the street of Kirby and stuff like that. That's
Yeah, it's
pretty
just like
awesome.
it's just a different kind of enjoyment. Like we can be like, "Oh, that's cool. I appreciate how they're using that character because we know that that character has a history and they're adapting it to fit into this universe." And then maybe somebody that doesn't have that knowledge, they'd be just like, "Oh shit, that guy's a bad guy," you know?
Yeah.
Like they might, and it works both ways. I mean, I like Black Canary being added to the show. But also there's that like
I like when she fights with that staff. She's pretty badass.
Yeah, and I like how they sort of fit her Canary Scream into the Arrow universe
Yeah,
by
that was pretty cool. I liked
being
it.
a device instead of her and tied that into I just got to where they're like pulling in some like the episode where they introduce the guy from the League of Assassins that's coming after her. So I liked how they tied that into her origin and stuff. And the guy that it was funny to see that the guy that they cast as the assassin, he was a big actor. He played a big role on the show Homeland.
Oh, I didn't watch that, so I didn't recognize him.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, that's the guy from Homeland. But he played like a terrorist leader, like equivalent of like Osama bin Laden kind of guy. But it's cool though. But it's like it's also I because I'm behind. I knew, you know, Black Canary, who she was gonna be and stuff. So maybe that might have been a little more surprising if I was watching it as it came out. But it doesn't take too much away from the enjoyment. And it's funny how this is the last thing I'll say about the show since it's pretty new. Is that so the actress that plays Laurel, is very pretty, you know, but it fits her character. She's like pretty conservative and stuff. And I feel like in the first season, most of like the sexual appeal of the show was based on like for people that are attracted to muscular men, you know.
Yeah.
And like all the ads and stuff like that, which is totally cool. Like it's refreshing to see that. Like, but like there, I didn't really think about it because I didn't really care. But there wasn't really like an equivalent. And it's interesting seeing like Black Canary introduce this character because it's like they're almost intentionally like, let's bring in some sexy for people who like ladies.
Yeah.
Because she's like doing her backstory. They're doing her backstory like after the boat crashed and she's
You know who I'm
all
falling in
wet
love with is
lingerie and stuff.
I'm falling in love with Felicity.
Oh yeah, she's
And
awesome.
it's not because she's like the most gorgeous character on the show or anything, but she's just, her personality and character is just, it's hooked me, man. I just love her. She's actually, of all those people, probably the most heroic of all of them in my eyes.
Yeah, she's
She
awesome.
doesn't have any like darkness about her. She doesn't, I don't know, man. If there is darkness about her, we'll find it out later, but I'm almost halfway through season two and I haven't seen it.
She's kind of like the Mary one, like as in like get married to, because she's awesome. But you know how I like right at this point where I'm at is Detective Lance.
Oh, he's grown on me. Initially, he annoyed me, like, but I swear to you, this second season, I've really enjoyed his character.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happens. I think like dad stuff gets to me. Like, I just like that, like the idea of dads, and I don't know. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I have a good relationship with my own dad. It's not because of that, but like when he
When you came back from the island, what did your dad say?
he, you know. I looked at all the empty Long Island iced teas, and I don't know what that means, but yeah, when he, I almost started like bust. I was like close to crying when he finally saw that his daughter was still alive, Sarah and stuff. I was just like,
Yeah. He did a good job of like facial expressions and eye, you know,
I think that's
like,
part of it. He's a good actor.
yeah, he did a really good job to capture that.
He really briefly, did you ever hear of those books? I know you don't read the books, but the Dresden Files.
I've heard of them. They made a comic book of it from
Yeah, oh
Dynamite.
yeah. That's what I was, I should have known you'd know that.
If you can link it to a comic book, I usually know it.
They did a really brief TV, they tried to do a TV show of that. It only lasted one season. I don't think it was even a full season, but he played the lead in it.
Oh, really?
He played, yeah, Harry, the like main Harry Dresden, the main character. So it's cool to see that, like, he has a new gig on a show that's successful and stuff.
And then the other thing that I've done this week is I bought a shit ton of Green Lantern books, thanks to you.
I saw it.
I now have every single Green Lantern comic book from 82 on,
Dang.
including the third series, fourth series, fifth series, all of it. Obviously, don't have the first series because the first series is Golden Age, Alan Scott. Don't have any of those, but I'm getting really damn close. I only have like two more issues of Green Lantern, Green Arrow. Well, three more issues of Green Lantern, Green Arrow to get, and then I'm into like the 12-cent issues, or 15 cents. So I'm working my way to 1969, baby, the year of my birth.
Working your way to 69.
The magic number.
Right now you're like hovering around the hips.
That's right.
You're
And
almost there.
so I got that, and I also said in the last episode that I was only missing a few Birds of Prey, like the mini series and stuff, and I completed that. So I own every single Birds of Prey comic ever published. And the other thing that
Nice.
I'm really proud of that I got this week, which, if you know, I love the Phantom Stranger comic book, and
Yeah.
I picked up his first Silver Age appearance in Showcase number 80, as well
Wow.
as Phantom Stranger number 1.
Nice.
So, yeah, I went on a spending spree.
Haven't bought anything. Well, anything physical. I've gotten some Humble Bundles lately. I actually read some stuff today from some Humble Bundles, which
Get the Valiant one.
I did get the Valiant one, yeah. I read something from that, and I read something from the Dynamite one that I bought that was a while ago. But those have been some pretty good deals. I haven't gotten all of them. Like, there was an image one that I already had most of the stuff in it.
Yeah.
But I got those two, and I also got I think there's 3 days left in it as we record this, in an Ani Press one that has mostly really recent stuff, a lot of like what looks like really interesting, good stuff to read. But yeah, I mean, if people aren't familiar with Humble Bundle, there's what it is. It like kind of started out as a video game only thing where proceeds go to charity, and you can get a lot of stuff for pretty cheap. And like you kind of decide what you want to pay. I usually pay like whatever the average is, and that's still like really cheap. But they've been doing book bundles, and a lot of them. Every once in a while, there'll be ebooks, but a lot of them have been comics, like the ones that I've mentioned. So, and a lot of it's new stuff, but there has been a little bit of old stuff. Like the Valiant bundle has a bunch of the Valiant Masters in it.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So that's what I've bought. Last weekend, a week ago today, was that Buffalo Comic Con that I went to last year, and I didn't have the greatest time. I didn't really like. There's not a lot going on there, and as far as purchasing, I really didn't buy that much. I didn't really find that many good deals last year, so I didn't bother going.
Yeah, I'm going today to one hotel con, but it depends on when Geek Brunch ends. The Geek Brunch proper. If I get there, I get there. If I don't, I don't. I'm not gonna. I wish I would have went yesterday, but sometimes there are some books I wanna. I'm going on the Phantom Stranger kick now. My ADD. It's like. And I'd like to complete my Swamp Thing run, the original series, which I'm very close to finishing.
Well, you were excited because you really loved the Future's End Phantom Stranger, right?
Oh,
That's kind of what got you
I
going.
absolutely loved it. Like the way they made him Judas and all the religious stuff they did. Oh my God, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
I was bawling. Barb was upstairs and she came down. What, are you okay? Did you fall? I was crying, man. I was like, son of a bitch. I love that character. And it kind of all started with reading the back issue stuff and then going into reading some of his showcase stuff. And then this new 52 series is it surpassed OMAC to me. Like is being my favorite, which is very abnormal, but I absolutely love it.
Well, that's pretty high praise.
Yeah.
Anybody that listens to any of your shows knows that.
That's amazing. It's a amazing book and he's an amazing character. I want to understand everything there is to know about him.
You wanna see the inside of him?
I do.
Well, the other thing I did this weekend, which I should probably say because it might explain things, was yesterday we had friends and friends over for brunch, so we made brunch and stuff, and it's like the first time I'd done that in like a year and a half. I mean, it's not a frequent occurrence, and so I made like this huge pitcher of Bloody Marys. And then, like, hardly anybody drank any,
So you drank
except
it
for
all.
me. So I drank some of it yesterday, and then, but there's like half left. I used a whole thing of tomato juice. So it was like, I think, like 8 cups worth or something of tomato juice. And then you add like 2 cups of vodka to it. So like half the pitcher is left today. So like I'm drinking Bloody Marys. I mean, I think I'm on my like third or fourth right now. So if I like start crying or like blabbing or something like
Yeah,
that,
under the
if I stop making
influence.
sense, yeah.
You can start being
So
like Knutson and just start rambling.
I know. It might get to that, so, but it's not episode 50, so I guess I'm not celebrating it, but it's like that rare occasion. I'm like, I can't let this go to waste. Like I made these Bloody Marys, and I don't want to pour them down the drain. That would be terrible. So, like I gotta man
Gotta
up.
drink your way through it. Drink
I
through
gotta
it.
drink through it, man. And so they're good. I think I described them to you before, and you thought they sounded disgusting, though, right?
Oh, I don't like liquor. Like,
Right.
I just
But
don't like it. Like, I'll drink it, but I mean, the man, I'll never spend money on liquor unless I'm going with friends somewhere.
yeah.
And it's the occasional thing. I don't like it. I mean, I guess there was a point where I was drinking it, and I ate some Butterfinger BBs and a lot of wine coolers, and after that incident,
Oh.
I just
That sounds
threw
gross.
myself up into never liking alcohol again.
It doesn't have to be like that, you know. You don't have
No,
to.
I know that, but it was a good thing. I save a lot of money.
It colors your
I could
experience.
buy comic books with my money instead.
I had an ex-girlfriend. Speaking of Butterfinger BBs, I had like a ex. I had an ex-girlfriend shove one of those up my nose one time.
Really? Did you pull it out or did
Yeah,
you
but it took a while. It hurt.
Oh man.
Those things are bigger than my nostrils.
At least it would dissolve eventually. The chocolate would melt.
Yeah.
And then you'd be down to the whatever that is in the middle. The nugget? I don't know what it is.
The tasty center.
A tasty center.
She wasn't my ex-girlfriend. It's like she was my girlfriend at the time, and it was a joke, I guess, but so it wasn't like a weird, strange chocolate fight or something. Chocolate fight.
And you got one up the nose.
Got it up the nose. So that was fun. Not everybody can say that. That's something not everybody can say. Not everybody's had chocolate up their nose. I know Daryl probably has, but
Yeah, he's probably done all chocolate every orifice, I'm
he's probably
sure.
had chocolate everywhere,
Yeah, in his ear, in his mouth, in his ass,
in his
everywhere.
peepee
And if he
hole.
hasn't had it under his own, it's been under somebody else's his pee-pee hole.
I don't know if you heard
I
that.
haven't. That's a good scientist term for that. I like that.
Yeah, it's that's how I learned that in biology.
The pee-pee hole.
Scientifically specific.
All right. Do you want to get started talking comics or do you want to jump right into Space Rockers?
It doesn't matter to me. We were kind of We started out in the Space Rockerville, but now we've wandered,
We've wandered.
we've drifted through some dark places.
All right, we'll start
So,
with comics then, since we drifted.
sure, why not keep the drift going?
Yeah. I'll talk about the first one, Black Lightning number 11, from 1995, when comics were wonderful, just like every other decade. This was written by David DeVries. The penciler, I never even heard of him. But the penciler was Octavio Carrillo. I never heard of him either. The inkers were Keith Champagne and Sergio Carrillo. Now, I've heard of those two guys. But this was awesome. And this was the one issue that I was missing from the entire series because it only went to like issue 14 or 13. And this was the one that I was missing. And I finally got around to reading it. And it was cool. It starts off on Monday night in Brick City, and you have this guy talking to a prostitute, and they're talking about different turfs. And she wants them to protect her. She wants to become a member of this royal family, which is like a gangster area. And he's like, "Well, what makes you think you can that we want you?" And then she goes, "That's up to you." And she makes this look like, "Hey, I'm gonna go down on you." And there's some bum outside the street peeking in, and he sees something because he says, "Welcome to the family, sister." So she did something, and that bum is just checking things out. I don't know why he's looking in the window, but these guys come and beat the shit out of him, and then Black Lightning comes and just electrifies the shit out of him because he protects bums and he protects prostitutes, and he's getting really violent about it. So violent that one of the detectives is like, "What's going on?" You know, his name is Lieutenant Colvito, and he's like, "Are you sure you're protecting the right people?" He says, "Lately you've been protecting the prostitutes and the bums and everything," and he's like, "I protect everybody." Have you watched Gotham?
I've only watched the first episode so far.
Well, they play with that theme a little bit. Like, what's just, you know? Like, Bullock doesn't give a shit about bad people. Like, if something bad happens to him, he's like, "Yeah, that's one more asshole off the street." Whereas Gordon is like, if we go down to that level, there's no consistency. There is no justice. It has to be justice for all or justice for none. And that's kind of the way Black Lightning thinks. And then there's some politics that go on in here. They're talking about Black Lightning, and then we get to another couple more prostitute scenes and pimp scenes, and there's a lot of stuff. And Black Lightning's protecting the prostitutes from this guy, and this guy is he's kind of a cool name. His name is Sick Nick, and he's killing. I don't know if he's like just killing people randomly, but he seems to be like a Jack the Ripper. Do you know what I mean? He's seeking out like prostitutes or lowlifes, and he's killing them. And he's doing it in a way too that's got that gang, those gangbangers upset because he's killing their prostitutes, he's killing their drug dealers, he's killing people that are part of that family. And so they're after Sick Nick. So they send like vigilantes after him. I mean, a bunch of gangbangers trying to find Sick Nick. And Black Lightning runs into a bunch of dead bodies because Sick Nick saw one of the prostitutes like in the on a street that was kind of vacated and was going to kill her. And they were using her as bait. In other words, it was that prostitute at the beginning. They were like, "We're going to use you as bait, and as long as you agree to be bait, we'll let you into the family." That was her thing. And he was going to kill her, so he fell for the bait. And all the guys came after him with guns and bats, and he killed every single one of them. He killed like eight dudes. And then Black Lightning saw all the dead dudes, and he's like, "I got to find him." And then you find Sick Nick later on with the one prostitute chained to a wall, and she's stripped of all her clothing except bra and panties, and he's getting ready to cut her up, and he ends up slitting her throat, but I don't know if she died immediately from that slit. But Black Lightning heard the scream, and he ran down the stairs and he tried to save her because he knew who this prostitute was, and he electrified the shit out of him, but Sick Nick's a meta, so it didn't do shit to him. And then Black Lightning he starts laughing like hysterically, and Black Lightning starts punching the shit out of him. Meanwhile, the detective sees all these dead gangbangers in the streets, and the only word that comes out of one of them is Black Lightning. So he's like, "Black Lightning killed all these dudes? What the fuck's going on with that guy?" And then so Sick Nick actually escapes. He stabs like Black Lightning like three or four times. He escapes. He turns out to be one of the politicians like of the city. His name is Adrian Wentworth. He's like, "Why are you doing this?" And he's like, he doesn't really answer. He just takes off, and he escapes, and he leaves Black Lightning with a dagger in his leg, and he was cut up in his gut too. So he's bleeding, and then the cops run down the stairs and they see Black Lightning there with the girl chained with a knife in his hand as he pulls it out of his leg. And the detective says, "No, it can't be. Black Lightning is Sick Nick." And he's holding the knife like, "Oh fuck." So it was a pretty good issue. I liked it. The art was really cool.
Sick Nick sounds like a dude that should be in like an 80s hair metal band.
He sounds like a Santa Claus, like somebody that would be in like Silent Night, Deadly Night or something like that.
I think I'm thinking of like Nikki Sixx from Motley
And
Crue
I was thinking of Saint Nick.
or something. He's the one you make, he's the one you call like to feel good.
But it was awesome. It was a good comic. I almost
Nice.
wanna I have read the old one, but I don't remember it, but man, trying to find it's gonna be a son of a bitch.
Yeah, probably.
If it was on digital, I think I might go on at least find out, finish the arc, but I don't think it is.
I don't think like Black Lightning gets a lot of exposure
I
in
know they have
that
his mini
series.
series out there, which is like in the 2000s. It was prior to the New 52. They have that one out there, but I don't think they have this one.
Yeah, I haven't really read much Black Lightning. I've never read anything where he was a starring character, but I've, read him
And the
in Justice League and
Outsiders.
stuff like that, or Outsiders or
Yeah.
whatever.
He was created by Tony Isabella and Trevor Von Eden. And he's a good character. I've always liked him. Mostly my exposure to is from his, because his solo series don't last long. You know what I mean? I think my first experience with Black Lightning is when they asked him to join the Justice League, and he's like, "Hey, you jive turkey, I'm not gonna join the Justice League," he tells Superman. And then I went and picked up his older issues, and then he, I think I more mostly my exposure is from the Outsiders, because I've always loved the Outsiders. I always love like groups of characters that are obscure, and having Black Lightning and Metamorpho and Katana and Halo, and it was just it was a good mixture for me. And that's why I love like books like OMAC and Fan. I tend to navigate to the books that don't last very long. I mean, as far as like loving them, it's because I think they have to write a hell of a story even to try to make it to begin with. Because it's not Batman or it's not Superman, so what do you got to do, you know?
Well, I feel like you get to a point too where you've seen a lot of stuff, you want to see something different,
You think
Like
that,
it's
but I don't think the majority thinks like that. But at the same time, I have that other obsession where I'll always get a Flash comic no matter what. Like, if that was the last comic to get, that's what I would get over everything else, just because that book is the first superhero from DC that I really navigated, went to.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of true for me too. But I don't know, do you like Flash right now?
Yeah, I like it, but I liked it better under the other creative team with Buccioletto, and Manapul drew some of it, but not all of it. But I really, the first arc in the New 52 is kind of slow because it was a lot of the Gorilla Grodd stuff. And once they got out of that arc, I started to love it. And now that they're with the new story arc, I'm about 2 issues in, but I've fallen behind. But it's not my favorite art style, and it's not my favorite storytelling, but I'm still enjoying it. I don't hate it.
I don't know if I like the new one, but the new team. But anyway, so I read something kind of unusual for me. Like I said, I read some stuff. I've been getting all these comics from Humble Bundle and sitting in there. I should read some of them. So I ended up reading something from the Dynamite bundle, It had a bunch of Vampirella comics in
Oh, nice. That's so sweet.
it. And I don't have any history with her, which is probably good because I'm a married man.
Yeah, that's right.
It had 3 volumes of the Vampirella Masters series that they put out as trades, and the one I read was collected stuff written by Warren Ellis, with most of it. So it was originally Vampirella Lives 1 through 3, and it came out in the late 90s with Amanda Connor pencils and Jimmy Palmiotti inks. I like her art. I can tell that it's from her art from the late 90s, not from more recently. Like, I think that she's gotten better, more refined, in her work, but it's pretty cool. Like I said, I mean, kind of jumping in, I don't know much history on Vampirella, and it's a character in comics that's, like, from what I know, has been rebooted a lot. Or not, maybe not necessarily rebooted, but has a lot of, like, mini-series and shorter ongoings and stuff.
Oh, I'm gonna have fun posting the picture to number one. I know which one I'm gonna use too.
there's some sexy time
This is a photo
going on
image.
here.
Hell yes. Even if I pick 1B, it's nice.
I don't know if they have all the covers in here, like alternate covers and stuff.
I'm gonna have fun with these ones. One through three.
Take a choice. But so as the written
I
the
haven't read these. I haven't read them. I might look for them now. Son of a bitch. You did it again.
without fail, I think I should or I think that you should start having, like, comic book re reading retreats at your house. I was thinking about this when you were talking about how you have all the Green Lanterns and Birds of Prey, and it's like, I'm gonna start keeping a list of, like, stuff that I want to read that I don't have, and then I'm just gonna fly to Colorado and spend a week at your house reading comics.
Yeah, the 2 week marathon where where I employ you to organize everything.
Yeah, and
And you can read,
whenever
but
you walk out of the
you
room, I'll
can't
be like,
slack. There better be progress at the end of the day.
it's like, okay, Mike's gone. I get back to reading. Stop cataloging, start reading. Until I hear the footsteps on the stairs. But so Vampirella Lives. It's as it sounds, she early on in the miniseries is resurrected, this guy who's sort of an old guy that's he's an old guy that walks with a cane, and he lives in this town called Whitechapel. His name is Fever Year. He is a private eye, but he's got this just real broken down, crappy old little house, and he witnesses the resurrection. So the two of them are kind of working together. He helps her out a bit. But Whitechapel has a vampire problem, and Vampirella, her deal is, she is the first daughter of Lilith, who Lilith was the first was before Eve. She was cast out by God from the Garden of Eden because she wasn't interested in following his rules or being subservient to Adam. So she left Eden, and as a revenge against God, started having sex with demons and stuff, and her offspring were vampires. So she's the origin of all vampires, and so she's had hundreds of children, but Vampirella was her first. And Vampirella
She must
vows.
be like a mythical vampire too, because Lilith is in True Blood, and other shows as being like the pretty much the start of vampirism, like the god of it, if you will.
Right, yeah, it's not a
Pretty cool that you're talking about this because I just finished reading Vampirella's the new series from Dynamite.
Oh, okay.
And they're just talking about Lilith too, so.
Yeah, I haven't read any of that stuff, but I figured that it probably was picked up in other places. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Lilith is something that's not unique to the Vampirella universe. It is something that's like part of mythology, and that's one of the things about this series is that, or about like Warren Ellis's work here, is that he's really tying it strongly into mythology and tying Vampirella as this like mythological creature, because she goes through a shrine to Lilith that's in the cemetery at Whitechapel, and actually communicates with her mother, and her mother tells her that God is destroying all myth, starting with the oldest myths and working his way forward, and so that she is in danger of being destroyed, of being just erased from existence by God. Meanwhile, I get the impression that this is something that maybe is carried forward from prior series. Vampirella has an enemy named Nyx, and she's got a lackey that is like a John Constantine looking dude called Hemorrhage. He's like psychokinetic abilities that he can control. He can with his mind control the blood inside of people's bodies. And Nyx, his boss, is like a chaos agent. So they're kind of lurking in the background while Vampirella is taking out vampires around Whitechapel. Eventually Vampirella figures out that and Fever Year, the guy that she's working with, finds out that this place, Whitechapel, that they're in, was originally created as a place that a place to like as a feeding ground for vampires. Vampirella, she discovers through the Lilith Shrine that there's a secret door that takes her down into this massive shrine, this massive big room with these huge statues and stuff like that, and it's all connected to the city of Whitechapel, and the streets of Whitechapel are angled in such a way that the blood will drain down the streets into these holes that go into funnels that lead down into this big room. And people, the vampires around Whitechapel, over the years, people have settled, real human beings have settled into Whitechapel. And at one point in the miniseries, the vampires all just start killing everybody, all the humans in Whitechapel, and leaving their bodies to run, their blood to run down the streets into into this big room. And it's all to resurrect this eldest son. And earlier in the miniseries, you see written in blood in different places, eldest son. You're not really sure until this point what that means. I like visually the way that they depict the eldest son resurrecting. There's this pool of blood, and he's a skeleton, and he rises up out of the pool of blood, and it's almost as if his organs are being recreated within the pool of blood. He's actually picking up his intestines and stuffing them back into his chest. There's bits of skin that are starting to reappear. But whereas Vampirella is the oldest child, the eldest son is like the first male vampire, I guess. But as it turns out, he's completely fucking nuts. And Vampirella ends up having to work with Hemorrhage to keep the eldest son from completely resurrecting. And the eldest son is kind of nuts because he's aware of what's going on with God and with with Lilith being destroyed and the Garden of Eden being destroyed and just all the oldest ideas dying. So there's this kind of cool moment where Vampirella attacks Hemorrhage and forces him to use his power on a scale that he's never attempted before, where he actually takes all the blood that's been funneled down into this room to resurrect the eldest son and makes it all rocket into the sky. So it starts just detonating blood all over the city of Whitechapel and busting the city apart and breaking the eldest son himself in half. At the end of the series, it leaves some stuff for the future because Vampirella throws Hemorrhage's body into the realm where Nyx is hiding with "I live" scratched into his chest. And throughout this series, there's also a sense that Vampirella is kind of discovering herself over again, where she's realizing that she has power over men, that she can control them with her sexuality and her hypnotic powers and stuff. There's also a little mini series, I think, was in some kind of, or excuse me, a little mini comic that was concluded in some kind of like anniversary issue for Vampirella, where Ellis literally takes her through like all these different eras in history, and different mythologies like Egypt, Greece, India, Japan, shows how Vampirella has been a part of all these mythologies. And then finally, there's a little story in the back that has completely different art. All that stuff that I've talked about so far was Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. But the last thing in this volume is called
Oh,
Vamp.
Palmiotti inked it?
Yeah, Palmiotti inked it.
That
Yeah.
that's interesting because they're kind of like just recently married. That goes back to 1997.
Yeah. And I think he was inking a lot more often than he does now
Oh yeah,
in the
yeah, yeah.
90s,
Now
yeah.
he's like writing a lot. Like that's what he's doing
Right.
a lot. Even Amanda Connor's starting to write with Harley Quinn too, so
And doing a good job of it, I would say.
I would. It's very lighthearted and very humorous.
That's very funny, yeah. As long as you don't mind dark humor.
Yeah, it's humor, but there's a lot of characterization in there too. Kind of reminds me of American Horror Story Freak Show. Because there's a bunch of crazy ass, cast members.
Yeah, and I've heard people compare it to Deadpool, but I think there's got to be a lot of differences there because you and I don't like
That
Deadpool.
we hate Deadpool. Well, I hate Deadpool. I'm sorry. I used to like him,
Yeah.
back in the Rob Liefeld, and then when he started to break that fourth, when everybody started to love him, is when I just jumped like I don't like him.
I mean, I
But
don't know if I hate him. I'm like a little bit more indifferent than that, but it doesn't make like I don't care about it, and I don't read Deadpool, and it doesn't make me laugh. Whereas I just adore the Harley Quinn series. I think it's hilarious, and I
yeah.
just think it's fun. So,
Yeah,
but
I don't hate Deadpool. I think Deadpool's a great character and I'm glad people are excited about it. I just don't like him.
yeah.
I don't like grit my teeth like hate him. You know what I mean? I've tried him and I don't like him. Kind of like Agents of Shield. I've tried it. I don't like
Yeah.
it.
I think that that comparison is out there, and if people have heard that and don't
Well,
like Deadpool and haven't tried Harley Quinn, I wouldn't necessarily assume that you won't like Harley Quinn if
I
you don't
think
like
it's
Deadpool.
I think it's a good comparison though for the tone. I mean, maybe not.
Yeah.
It's very different, but the tone it's not a dark book. It has a lot of humor in it. Humor and violence. That's what they are.
That's true. That's
Yeah.
true. There is something to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's this little 14-page story. It's also written by Warren Ellis, but it's totally different. It's got a different tone because it's got a different artist. It's painted by Mark guy named Mark Beecham. And it's real realist. It's pretty realistic t looking, but with a sort of a sketchy style. And it deals with this Irish myth of a seductress in folklore who would use her beauty to lure men. And the only way of getting out of her grip was to find a substitute man who would end up becoming her prey, and then that would allow you to escape. So there's this guy that's been murdered, like in a really like disgusting way. It starts off with these detectives investigating this body, and they're talking to each other, and this guy had died. So trigger alert here, people, if you're sensitive to violence. He died masturbating and bleeding. So he was like already cut open and bleeding, and was masturbating while he was cut up. And then dying, he excreted, and excreting attracted ants who then had like eaten into his body. So that's pleasant. but this body, they call the detectives call this expert, and she points out that there's this connection to something from the Scheherazade, which is the 1001 Nights and Arabian stories and stuff. And there's this man named Sidi Newman, who has a ghoul wife named Amani. And she's like, either that was symbolic to him, or he had some kind of like fantasy about this Amani woman, and he was masturbating over that while draining off his own blood, and like made him like a mistake. But then Vampirella shows up, and the detectives are like, "Yeah, you're the killer, right?" And she's like, "Yes, but it's not that simple. Do you like, you've taken the body out of here, and you've cleaned the room, and it still stinks in here. Don't you know why?" And they think that it's just because he
Knutson was in the
was,
elevator with them.
yeah. So they call in Keith Knutson, fart detective. They're like, "Mr. Knutson, can you please explain what this smell is?" And he takes a big inhale, and
That's how he tracks the killers, is he's like the fart smeller.
yes, he says, "From the details of the scent that I'm inhaling, I can tell that the last meal that this person had was a hamburger from White Castle
And some blackberry
and
juice.
some blackberry juice. And those two things can only be bought on this street, this particular street. So if we check the traffic camera from that particular location, I think we'll find our killer."
It's the next chew, except he's sniffing farts.
Yes. Keith Knutson, Fart Detective, coming from Image Comics, 2015. That's his new gig. Just like Dick Grayson is no longer Nightwing, Keith has given up the Brown Arrow costume and is now the Fart Detective. So this guy's a serial killer. He was basically trying to set a trap to pull in a new victim, so that he would be he thought that Vampirella was this Irish ghoul, but she's not, and he made that mistake. But he set this trap so one of the detective feels that he's connected, feels like he's getting drawn into Vampirella. And I don't know, it's a neat little short story, but it's, the bulk of the book was the Vampirella Lives story. But it's different, like the art style is so different, it's kind of jarring, but it's funny how this because it's realistic, it looks like more like what a woman who's very curvy would look like if she was just wearing like a couple of red straps over her body. Like the artist doesn't leave anything to the imagination, in other words.
Yeah, it is weird. It's a weird costume, like, 'cause she does do like a lot of like detective stuff. And it's like sometimes the interpretation is like the Dynamite series before this one, it would have her fully clothed. But they'd have her in her bikini or whatever you want to call it, or thong or whatever, on the covers. So it was weird. And then this new one, she has no, like, that's her costume, you know, and she goes out, she takes off her jacket and she's ready all naked.
And honestly, like that's one of the things that it kind of like I didn't. There's more substance to it than you would realize because of that, maybe.
Yeah.
Like you kind of look at it and you're like, well, that's all that this, like that's all this character is about, is this costume. And it, like, and it took getting these comics as a part of like a really cheap bundle for me to even try one. And it turns out that there's a lot of substance there, you know. And I don't know, maybe for as many people as that, like I'm okay with it, but for as many people as it draws in, you know, to have the sexy covers and stuff, like it may turn away some people that would be interested in it otherwise, you know, that might get into the whole mythology thing and stuff like that. So, but you know, whatever works.
Cool deal. So my next one is a repeat offender. I'm still enjoying the John Sable stuff, so I'm keeping on that track. It's hard to jump off because I just now I love my Grell, so it's like you get stuck in something. I love his storytelling. I love his art. But this is the continuation of the origin. So in the last show, we talked about how he came back to his house and those guys had killed his wife and his son. And this is the what the results of that are. And it opens up with Eden Kendril getting a phone call from Michael, which is a female. It's actually his artist. She calls and says, "This manuscript, is it true?" You know, she's reading his story, is basically his origin. And she says, "Yeah, I have a friend in the State Department that checked it out for me. It seems like it's really true. It's an autobiographical." And she just starts crying. She and starts reading it again. And the scene opens up in 1978, July of 1978, and he's there with his he buried his wife Elsie and son Mark and Heather. And he buried his kids, and he basically takes this black ashes, like the ashes from them after. I guess he, I don't know where he got ashes from, because he looked like he buried them, but maybe he cremated them and then buried them. I don't know. But he took ashes from it, and then painted his, put them on his face, and that's where the black. Like his mask comes from, if you will. He like has the outline around his eyes, it goes down to his jaw, that kind of thing. And then he kind of starts to look up his all gets all his hunting equipment, all his guns, and he makes off for hunting these people down. And because he's such a good tracker, if you remember, he used to be a tracker for other hunters and stuff like that. He's such a good tracker. He knows everything. He knows the vehicles that they're traveling in. He knows one of them's injured. He kind of knows everything, and he says, "I gotta catch them before they hit the Zambezi, which is a river, I believe." And
Actually, I think it's that thing that cleans the ice during hockey games.
Zamboni. So that's the tomato juice. So he sees these guys crossing the river. And he has this awesome trap, which is like this huge log. You know how like the Ewoks use those logs to swing them from trees and smash the AT-ATs? Well, he has this huge log with spikes in it. And these guys are crossing the river and he swings this thing and it literally pierces their in all the way through their guts and swings them back out. So he like knocked out three dudes with one trunk. And then these guys are like, run for it, run for the, you know, get out of the water, run for it. And the next guy he hunts, he pulls him by the neck, like he just grabs him by the neck and pulls him up, and then he puts a knife through his hands in a certain place where he won't fall, and he's hooked up to a tree with soldier ants, and he's just like, I'm gonna let these soldier ants kill you. It's gonna be a long, painful death as they eat your vital organs, and he just leaves them there after he
Now,
tells him, go
that's got to
ahead.
be the weirdest connection that we've ever had between comics is ants eating people's organs.
It's weird how we have those
That is
connections.
strange. That is one of the weirdest ones, definitely for sure. What
So
the hell?
he leaves him there to die, but he says, hey, if you tell me, give me names. And he does give him a name. He gives him a kraut named Kikuyu he needs to find. And he sees these two guys that were part of this expedition killing or trying to take the tusk out of an elephant. And he basically takes the tusk and pierces one of the dudes with the tusk. And then he lights a bunch of guys on fire that are crossing the river by throwing gasoline in the water, and he just burns them to death. He slits one guy's throat and takes off his head and leaves him there for other people to find. And then it cuts to a scene with one of his friends who's trying to find him to try to get him under control because he knows he's lost it, and he does find him, but he's not able to bring him in. He's not able to help him. He's like he's on his vendetta, and he's not going to stop. And he's after this guy with white hair, and they essentially show him, and that guy with white hair is like he's got like a plantation here somewhere, and he forms like a posse to go hunt him. But that doesn't work. He must have a fucking powerful gun because there's one scene where they're like marching in a row where they're taking tusks from elephants, and there's one, two, three, four, five dudes, and he has a gun that pierces all five of them because they're walking carrying these tusks. I've never seen a gun do that. I don't know. Maybe there is one, like a bazooka, but I've never seen like a shooting rifle do that.
Yeah.
Just went through all five of their bodies and just kept on going. If there was more bodies, it looked like it would have also kept on going. But he has a shootout with these guys, and he eventually kills a whole ton of them. And then he ends up with that guy with white hair, and it looks like the guy with white hair has him over a cliff and is gonna kill him. But then he throws a knife and cuts off his finger, and he falls over a mountain into like a waterfall. And so does his finger. But at the end of it, there's another set of people that are gonna go hunt him down. But that he essentially sought his vengeance, and he's going after one other name that was involved in the murder of his family, and that was his origin story. And it says next issue Killzone. So yeah, another good issue from First Comics, and I'm enjoying this ride. I like me some John Sable. Are you on mute?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bound to happen one of these days. I wanted to be like the regular Geek Brunch and have people accidentally muting themselves.
Oh, Bill, yeah, he hits his mute button.
The kids going crazy in the background.
Yeah, his parental advice is amazing. I just don't know where he gets those parenting instincts from.
He handles everything very calmly.
Yeah, very calmly, and he's like, "You can have three crackers."
Yeah. He just knows what to do.
Three
Well,
crackers and you have to eat them in 5 seconds or you don't.
otherwise, you are the weakest link.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, or they're using the internet when he's trying to do a podcast. That's not good.
Yeah, then he runs off. That's
That's
un
not allowed. Causing connection problems.
I'll be right back.
Like, why are we getting disconnected? Hang on. I'll be right back. Okay, so a couple weeks ago I talked about Tomb of Dracula, and I think I might have made a mistake and said that that was written by Marv Wolfman. Because he's so connected with it, and but I was looking more closely because I went to read number two, and I was looking more closely, and it turns out that he didn't start writing it until like issue seven or so, and that the issue number one that I talked about, I think two episodes ago, was actually written by Jerry Conway.
Did you actually catch it, or did somebody listener catch it?
Not that I know of. I didn't.
That's
Nobody.
interesting because I didn't catch it either.
No,
That's
because I mean.
because I associate with the entire run of Tomb of Dracula with Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan.
Exactly. And Gene Colan was definitely the artist. I had that right, and I'm looking at it and I know what his art looks like. But yeah, so I saw that number two was, I noticed that when I started reading number two that it was Jerry Conway, and I'm thinking, oh, that's weird. Was he the writer of issue one, or what was going on there? And I looked, oh, I screwed that up. Yeah, Marv Wolfman apparently didn't start till later on. So that was actually that first issue was written by Jerry Conway. So I read issue two. And as I said, it's written by Jerry Conway and has art by Gene Colan. And just as, what one of the things I said about issue one was that I was impressed by the way that it moved, that a lot more happened in it than I expected. That the plot, went pretty quick. Issue two is kind of similar in that way. It's called The Fear Within, and it picks up Count Dracula's castle has been destroyed by the villagers. It's in a condition of rubble, and we have his descendant going back to check out the ruins. Frank Drake is the guy's name, and he's with a man named Gort that's sort of his guide. So he knows that Dracula himself is probably still at large. So he's going to try to find Dracula's tomb. He's successful in doing that, and we get a little bit of a flashback to the first issue that in case we miss that. But surprisingly, his buddy Clifton from the first issue that was the first to encounter Dracula and fell down the pit, or was thrown down the pit where Dracula saves humans to feed on them later. It turns out that he's actually still alive. So they help him out of the pit.
As you take a swig of blood.
Yes. I need a little of my blood. It's all this talk of Dracula is making me a little thirsty here.
Bloody Mary.
Yes. I want to suck your tomato.
Look into my eyes.
So Clifton's back. He's a little bit of a scuzzy dude. But Frank fills him in on what's been going on. And then while this is all going on, so Frank, what he wants to do is take Dracula's coffin and take it away from the castle and take it somewhere else. He thinks that's gonna fuck Dracula up. But while this is going on, Dracula's out and about and he's feeding, and there's this shop owner. Actually, he's kind of like he's a doctor of some sort. I don't know if he's a physician or his name's Dr. Von Harbu. Older guy, beard, mustache, glasses, and he's treating a patient, and then they hear screams in the night that to them means, that the problems that Transylvania has had in the past have returned. So the guy that he's treating for his back problems, suddenly he's just fine and he needs to leave as soon as possible and gets out of there. Well, Von Harbo, he seems to have a history with Dracula because Dracula shows up and they know each other. And Dracula wants Von Harbo to make him look less like he's undead. So I don't know. It's a little vague what he actually does here, but Dracula seems pleased by it, and the art doesn't really quite reflect the change. But apparently, Van Harbo does maybe some plastic surgery, or I don't know what the hell he does. Maybe he's got a like a side skill of makeup, but he once he's done this, Dracula actually attacks him for betraying Dracula to his killers back in the day when. When Dracula was out and about for the first time. So Frank and Clifton, they're taking Dracula's coffin away, and Frank, they're in a hotel room. Frank hears some commotion in the bathroom, and he knows Clifton's gone. Well, it turns out that his Jean, his girlfriend Jean, who got turned into a vampire in the first issue, is in the shower, fully clothed, for whatever reason. But she tries to come on to him, and Clifton comes back, and he's drunk, and Clifton has a thing for her as well, we know. So he's pretty excited to see her, and Frank tries to convince him, tries to get him to take a clear look at him. He's been drinking anyway, so to recognize that Jean has clearly changed, she's been turned into a vampire and stuff, and but she looks at Clifton and starts using her hypnotic powers on him. Even though Frank shows her a crucifix and it has a negative effect on her, Clifton is a pretty susceptible target for her powers. So while Dracula is out, he's out looking for a new victim. He goes to a bar and hits on a woman that he sees walking in, and it turns out, she's got a boyfriend and stuff. And the boyfriend gets in a fight or tries to get in a fight with Dracula, and Dracula takes him out pretty easily. And then takes the woman outside and ends up feeding on her. And like her boyfriend's friends follow after, but they're too late. She's been fed on, and all they're able to see is Dracula, turn into a bat and disappear. And at that point, he goes back to a suite where he's staying, and it turns out this whole plot to steal a coffin is not all that all that clever. It's an inconvenience to Dracula, but it's hardly fatal. The big deal is when he's on the road. Dracula on the road. He, as long as he's got Transylvanian Earth, he's in good shape. Even though he'd prefer to have his coffin, just like a lot of us like to sleep in our own beds. But if we're on the road and we got a hotel bed that we can spill dirt all over, we're good.
You could bring your own pillow, like
Yeah,
that
you bring
kind of
your own
thing.
pillow. Yeah,
You can't
Transylvania
have your
Earth.
own bed, but you could bring your own pillow if you can't sleep.
Dracula brings his own pillow. Exactly. I like that.
I did see Dracula on what is it, Untold?
Was it
I
Untold? Yeah.
don't know, whatever it is. That was an interesting take on him because it's more like how he became Dracula, which that isn't told too often. You know,
Yeah, that's
The
true. They...
battle with the Turks and all that, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, the reviews for that haven't been too great, but.
It's not brilliant. It is refreshing to see a vampire movie of Dracula that is more in the historical sense.
Yeah.
Like the origin. Here's the origin, because you don't usually get that.
That's true. Yeah, I don't.
You usually get him when he's already killing people. He arrives in a boat and he's massacring everybody
Yeah.
and finds the love of his life. Well, now you get the backstory of how he became Dracula and Nina, like why he loves Nina and why he loved his wife and kids and stuff.
And the Pinta and the Santa Maria.
That's right.
But so the big surprise in this issue is that as I said, Jeannie, she's got Clifton under her spell, and Dracula ends up coming after them, and there's a fight and everything. In the course of the fight, some furniture gets broken and stuff, and such that Frank's on the ground and he's able to pick up a big shard of wood, and he actually stabs Jeannie in the back, through her back into her heart. And as Dracula takes off as a bat, the sun starts coming up, and there's a sad moment where Jeannie starts turning to dust from the sunlight. As she's dying, she suddenly has awareness again of her old self. So it's pretty heartbreaking for Frank, because he finally sees the old Jeannie again as she's dying. And the comic ends on a really dark note, because Frank's sort of like losing his mind, and Clifton's laying on the ground crying, and there's just mourning comes, but there's sorrow and agony of grim frustration. That's how the comic ends. So it's a really dark ending. I liked it. I mean, I again thought that a lot happened in the issue. They're not wasting any time, So it just makes me curious as to where things will go, because you'll start an issue and you'll see, okay, I can see some seeds being planted for this to happen, and then it happens before the issue's even over. So you think, oh, what's going to happen? Like, where are things going to pick up next time,
Yeah. Is it a pretty dense read?
Somewhat, but not as bad as some comics from this era can be.
Okay.
Let's say like it's moderate, but not crazy. Not crazy, intense. So
All
it's
right.
pretty cool. I liked it.
Well, my next one is Legends of the DC Universe, number 4. Part 1 of 2 by William Messner Loebs and Mike Diodato Jr. And no strangers to Wonder Woman, as they both work together in the series. So this might have been a I don't know if it was one of those stories they had on the shelf or what it was, but it is an interesting take. It starts off with Professor Capitellus, who's one of the major Wonder Woman supporting cast members, being beaten up. Like, she was there trying to go to a bank to get some stuff, and she gets caught up in this crazy ass robbery where there's like four women with these huge battle armor suits. I mean, they're dressed in these huge ass battle armor suits that they stole, and they're having a shoot off with the police. And Wonder Woman arrives, and the first time you see her, it's kind of like, wow, that's kind of interesting. I've never seen that before. But in the early Wonder Woman get-up, there's times where she had the skirt, where it was kind of like a. In this case, she's wearing the skirt. But it's pretty long, and you don't usually see her with the skirt in this era. But she has a skirt. She says, "My name is Diana Prince, and I'm with the special representative to the United Nations from Themyscira. I wish to help." So she tells the detective that. Detective's basically, "I don't want your help." While she's there, there's a car that's overturned, and she goes to rescue somebody from the car. So she breaks it open, lifts the car up, rescues the person, and then she says, "I'm going to go to the front door w and try to negotiate with these women because my specialty is talking to women. So let me talk these women through this." And she goes to the door, and as soon as she opens her mouth, they blast her with those laser cannons or whatever the hell it is. And they think that she killed her. It was a huge gun. It's like a Rob Liefeld gun, just blasting the shit out of her through the door. And she barely had a time to put up her manacles or bracelets, and even then it wouldn't have done no good because it's like a huge blast. So you don't know what happened. And then the detective says, "We got to get in there." She seems really gun happy, but Wonder Woman breaks in there. She starts fighting with those guys. The professor, that's her friend, actually clocks one in the head and gets backslashed and given almost a concussion. And then Wonder Woman starts disassembling their armor pieces and taking them apart. Meanwhile, the detective, Sally Marston, r rushes in, guns a-blazing, and shoots one of those guys in the head, but she just starts shooting crazy. Like, she starts shooting even towards the hostages. She doesn't give a fuck. And Wonder Woman actually has to protect the hostages by jumping in front and of her gunfire and using her bracelets to protect her, but that detective actually shot Wonder Woman in the shoulder. And at the end of it, she acts like her and Wonder Woman saved the day, like we're partners. But it's weird because she was like the Punisher there for a second. And at the end, it ends with the scene of Ares watching the scene, you know, and he's kind of like there on a bunch of dead bodies with a deep laugh and it with lots of blood. So maybe Ares took over that detective and made her gun crazy. Or maybe it was the space rockers music. I don't know. But that was weird for that detective to do that. But maybe Ares was in control of her. I guess we'll find out next issue.
That would be weird if there was a crossover.
Yeah, that would the space rockers, if they show up, I'll be blown away.
Yeah, never know. Well,
That's
until you read the next issue.
right.
Wait, so which issue is that?
This is Legends of the DC Universe number 4.
Oh, okay. And that series, that kind of crossed over a bunch of different stories, right?
Yeah, the last three that I covered were Superman. This is now Wonder Woman.
Right.
Who knows
Okay.
what
It's the
number
beginning of a new
6 will
story.
be? Yeah.
Gotcha. Nice. All right. So my last one was also from a Humble Bundle. Bumble blum blum. It is Exo Manowar, issue 0 and issue 1. I think you probably know this. I think issue 0, it came out later on, right? Because
Yeah.
they have it first in this Valiant Masters hardcover, because it is the origin story pretty much. And I have read actually a good portion at least of the new Exo Manowar. Certainly, covering the new take on the origin and stuff.
Yeah, it came out about a year later.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
Over
issue
a
zero,
year.
it's Joe Quesada is the penciler on this, and once here we go again, Jimmy Palmiotti was the inker. Bob Layton and Jorge Gonzalez were the writers. So, I mean, if you're not familiar with this, but you're familiar with the newer Exo Manowar, the new Valiant, the general thrust of the story is similar. It takes place Well, you have like a Visigoth from like around the year 400, named Eric, who ends up having an encounter with alien species that have this technology, the exo battle suit. But I was impressed with this original Valiant version. It's a fairly brutal origin. The by a couple pages in of Eric's story, in the past, the Romans attack and both his parents are killed. And I mean, they do put one of the more violent panels completely in shadow, but there's a strong implication that the Roman warriors are raping his mother before they kill her by slicing her throat. And then when his father attempts to avenge her, they chop off his head and throw it at Eric. So it's really violent. And it's when you jump forward about 9 years to when Eric is now a strong, got an adult body and is much stronger, and is a part of a group of Visigoths, attacking and making raids on Roman cities. There's no question as to why he has a strong anger and rage against the Romans. But he meets a woman who is a slave to the Romans, and because the Visigoths serve some of the same or worship some of the same gods as the Romans, and he's particularly opposed to the Romans, he has no interest in really having anything whatsoever in common with them. So he's happy to convert to the god that this slave woman follows, and ends up wedding her. Just kind of like, it's just, there's no like actual ceremony or anything. It's just like an agreement between the two of them, that he decides to serve the god that she follows and stuff. So then there's the moment that you're expecting where Eric and his other Visigoths, they come upon a clearing where there's these alien creatures that they think of as being demons from hell, and they attack, but Eric is taken up in the spaceship and made a slave by these insect-like creatures. Just as he does in the New 52, the New 52, the New Valiant. Same difference. He ends up getting the armor. I mean, the process is a little bit different, as I at least to my recall. He meets a guy who calls himself the map giver, and he ends up giving, as his name implies, he ends up giving Eric a map, but they have no way of writing things down, so he actually carves the map into Ulrich's hand, Eric's hand. So I thought that was kind of a neat detail. And it's kind of funny how Eric, he spends a good portion of this running around naked, which gets funnier when he gets to Earth. But the map giver tells him, when you get to the room where the armor's at, grab this ring, and the ring will give you power to control the armor. So he grabs this ring, and the exo armor, Eric keeps calling it a skin. He's kind of, it's written in such a way to give the impression of his sort of understanding from as a guy from the year 400. He keeps calling it a good skin. This is a very good skin, this armor. And he's able to use it to escape, and protects him. And so it's kind of like his escape is where issue zero ends. But I also read issue number one, which is called Into the Fire, and the start on this one is Barry Windsor Smith. This one actually picks up when when Eric is already on his way to the armor within the ship. So there's a few pages that are kind of a little bit of an overlap to the Zero story. But after a few pages in, he's on Earth. He lands in snow. And at this point, I mean, to him, the armor is just something that allowed him to escape. So he takes it off, and he just walks naked into this village that looks kind of like it might be in South America or something like that by the clothes and stuff. And he expects a fight, but he just gets he gets welcomed and fed by the people in the village. So then we switch to New York, where we see that these human-looking beings discussing Eric, and they somehow know the events of what's going on, and they're after the Exo armor. And you know, as it'll turn out, or as we might already be aware from the similarities to the new Valiant comic, these are the aliens in disguise as humans. But Eric's kind of making a living of what he can in the village, and he's learning a little bit of Spanish. And he's starting to sort of have some feelings about one of the female villagers there. But something happens where villagers are attacked, and Eric comes upon their bodies. They're completely desiccated, as if like somehow their life essence had been just extracted from them. They're just not, they're husks basically, instead of just like freshly killed bodies. So Eric figures out that there's something to this armor that he had, and he's still got the ring. And the ring is actually communicating with him and telling him that the armor is currently located to the north. So that's a little bit of a difference. Like he's not as he doesn't quite figure out at this point that he can has the power to call the armor to him. He just is able to sense where it's located. Because the armor itself is with the aliens in New York. They don't really have access to it other than to just keep it there. But Eric starts making his way, and there's a point that cracks me up kind of, because he gets access to some weaponry, some futuristic weaponry. There's a point where he walks buck naked into a camp of these aliens holding a bazooka and just fires off the bazooka and blows up a helicopter. And he's just pretty much walking around buck naked with a except for a rifle or a bazooka slung around his neck. So, I mean, I thought that I was the only one that did that, so it was just kind of comforting to me
You,
to
there seems
discover
to
that.
be a lot of if I had a drink for every time you said naked, there I'd be drunk already.
I really want to emphasize the fact that Eric is naked in this comic, just in case Bill has missed this.
Yeah.
But that's just the word of the day.
The key word is naked.
What I'm trying to get across here is that he's walking around naked. So he walks naked into a town, and these prostitutes are like, we've never really seen anybody so ready. It's like, you know, because he's naked. And but an alien jumps down and tries to attack him, and Eric is taken in by this guy who Eric's a little confused by him, because this guy is real small and effeminate, and to Eric he's acting kind of like a woman. And what I mean, it turns out, like, I mean, the guy's gay. And Eric's a little confused by that, but he's just like, well, whatever. And the guy helps him out. He was supposed he's in contact with the aliens, and he's supposed to turn Eric in, but he ends up helping him out and getting him out of the area before he reports back to the aliens. Eric at this point is still communicating in really, really rough Spanish. He says, "Gracias, amigo. amigo, amigo Ken." But Ken takes him and is trying to help him escape, but they get attacked by the aliens, who Eric is calling hardskins. And then finally, Eric figures out that he can call the armor to himself, so it starts activating in New York. And then instead of whispering the word north to Eric, it says yes. And Eric says, "The good skin, it comes." So he has the armor once again wrapped around himself, so he's not naked anymore, and he uses the power of the exo armor to fight off the aliens' technology and stuff. And there's a pretty big battle, and it ends kind of on the note that the aliens that are disguised as humans in New York, they realize that this is more of a problem than they realized. Meanwhile, Eric is realizing that this good skin that he has, this new skin, allows him to be the strongest one and be the ruler, and that he can use it to kill the hard skins. So, yeah, it was cool. Like I said, it was by layouts by Barry Windsor Smith, written by Jim Shooter and Steve Englehart, with finished art by Bob Layton and John Holdridge. So I liked it. I think it has enough in common with the original, but it's worth reading. It's not just like when they started the new variant, they didn't just rehash the old approach. They did a different take on it and stuff. And there's certainly a difference between the two stories. You can get something different out of it. I think that Eric in this version seems a lot more barbaric and doesn't really catch on to the modern way of things, or like modern language and stuff. And his thoughts and stuff, as they're communicated to you, seem a lot more barbaric and stuff.
Whereas on the other one, it seems like he's in space almost immediately.
Yeah, and
Maybe that's why he adapted the technology faster.
yeah, something. I feel like there was kind
Because
of some kind of.
he was a slave on that ship forever, it seemed
Yeah,
like.
you get impressed with that too, that in the new Valiant, he's on the ship a lot longer and stuff. There's more of a process there where it's that just happens really brief at the beginning of issue one, and then, like you said, a year later they filled in a little bit of backstory with issue zero. But so yeah, I enjoyed seeing this different take on the story because I wasn't really familiar with it.
That's cool. I'm glad you read it.
Yeah.
I'll have to post a link on Invaliant We Trust to say, hey, Chris covered XO.
Yeah, and actually, I'm not sure if I mentioned one thing I might have forgot was that he was naked
Yeah, he's naked.
for a bunch of this. If you like
Naked.
that,
Naked.
naked with a bazooka, not his, not the bazooka he was born with, but a new one.
That's the title of the episode. Bazooka. Naked with a
Bazooka.
bazooka.
The bazooka he was born with.
I have one more, but I'll be
Okay.
quick about it. It's Birds of Prey number two, just continuing where we left off with Jason Bard and Dinah over there in that island, where she's trying to take down Mr. Pajamas, Jackie Pajamas.
Pajama
And as
jeans.
we saw in the last episode, oh, this is by Chuck Dixon and Greg Land again. She was at the end of last episode, she had two gunmen. She was talking to Barbara over the her little secret earring mics or whatever. And they were creeping up on her. Well, in this episode, she's falling out the window with one of the gunmen, and she manages to contort her body so the gunman she lands on top of the gunman. Like she like was able to flip him, so he'll take the brunt of it. And then they all draw guns on her, so she's captured. And Barbara's like, "Oh shit, she's captured." And they take out her visual because she gets slapped in the face, but her audio is still there, so she could still hear what's going on. And she's like, "Oh crap!" She's actually really nervous because she doesn't know what to do now that she's captured. But she still has her mics, and she could still talk to her. So she's like, "I have a backstory for you. Tell her you work for Transglobal Insurance." And then they get into that discussion. Yeah. The guy with pajamas, the guy, pajamas guy's, his name is Reed. And he said, "Yeah, that's Jason Bard. I haven't seen him in years." And then they talk about that engagement again. And then you have a scene where she's in a chair and it looks like she's going to be tortured. And Jason Bard comes in. He's playing another character, not Jason Bard in this. And he says he's coming in to collect some precious things, and it sounds like he's gonna rape her and stuff. And like Barbara's freaking out, like she can hear this stuff, and she's like, "I was engaged to this motherfucker." And there's like three guys in the room, but he like comes really close to her, like he's gonna make an intimate move, and he whispers in her ear, and he's like, "I'm gonna help you out." And Barbara's like, "Thank God, thank God." You know, so he's like an undercover agent there too. Like, he was a private investigator trying to find some missing people. So that turns out that Jason Bard isn't as corrupt. He's acting that. So he lets her escape. They both escape. She says, "Hey, I'm Black Canary," and she doesn't want to tell her true name. But he says, "Yeah, I'm Jason Bard," and she goes, "I know." And he goes, "How did you know?" And she says, "That's my little secret." And then they're trying to escape, and Jason Bard, "I'll take the guy on the left, you take," and then Black Canary's, "No, I'll just take both of them. I could take them all out." But as they're trying to escape, Mr. Pajamas actually stops them, and he fires a gun like right. He's gonna like shoot Black Canary, and Jason kind of jumps in the way, and he shoots a gun like to brush his face, but he actually shoots it really close to his eyes. And then they capture Black Canary. Well, it turns out this guy holds like popular people for ransom, so he knows, you know, she's from Transglobal Insurance. So he does weird things, man. He like cuts off body parts and sends them for ransom, and I don't think he ever returns them. And then he also on the other side, he has them like a slave, so they'll like farm his land and grow whatever drugs he has and cut off pieces of him as time goes on. And then there's this weird character that Barbara has a relationship with, totally on the computer. Like they don't know each other. It's her cyber pal, who she talked to in the first issue. And they go back and forth, and she says, "I don't know if I should talk right now. I have a friend that's in grave danger," and he gives her advice and stuff. So it's very weird who this character might be. And let's see, how does it end? Oh, they're just captured, and they're doing like work in the labor yard, and she runs into Jason Bard again as they're going to work in the fields, and he's blind. He doesn't have any eyesight. He's got like a bandage over his eyes. I guess that gunfire shot blinded him. So that's interesting. So that's how it ends. She sees. She's trying to help the guy up, and she sees it's Jason Bard and he's blind. And she's like, "Oh shit, how am I gonna get him out of this?" But
Whoa.
it's good stuff. We get to
That's
see
cool.
Jason Bard be a hero. And it's weird because every time I've seen Jason Bard, he's like handicapped in some way. In the original, his shrapnel in his leg and he had the limp. This one, he's now blind. Who knows what'll happen in the new 52? But I'm sure we'll find out soon. I'm a little bit behind, but I'll have to catch up. So that's all. We can jump to, wait, play, put the music on.
Oh yeah. Oh
Yeah.
crap. I didn't have it queued up. Do you
Have
have
it
any questions or anything?
queued up. I think the question only involved the space rockers
Oh yeah.
for Norbert.
Norbert said what we thought about it, 'cause I think he watched it too, or at least he remembered it pretty good.
Yeah.
'Cause I can see how you could watch this a long time ago and you still remember it. It's
It's so
pretty
70s-ish,
memorable.
though. Like, even their moves are 70s-ish. It just seems.
Oh yeah, it's a 70s version of the future for sure.
There you go.
Oh yeah. Let's head to Music World, Mike.
Yes, to listen to Andromeda.
Andromeda Live. Slather on your glitter. Get out your light sticks. Grab your keytar. Invite all the Teletubbies that you know.
Yeah, that's what somebody commented on, that they look like Teletubbies. Maybe it was
Yeah.
Norbert.
Yeah, and Keith and his wife dressed up as Teletubbies.
No, they were the space rockers.
Well, that's what I'm gonna say. I thought, I mean, they said they were Teletubbies, but maybe they were actually part of Andromeda, and we didn't even know it.
Yeah. So this is a pretty cool concept. At least I thought it was. It's pretty hilarious too, but and the
Oh,
music is kind of
definitely.
catchy. But there's this band Andromeda, and they're very hip. I mean, they're like teenagers and young kids, and they love to hear them play. And there's like this space station, at least it looks like a space station, called Music World in space, and that's where they play from, and then they broadcast their music to other places. And whenever they play, the music causes them to riot, which we kind of already talked about. It causes these guys to get violent. And having said that, Buck gets involved because during the first play, these young kids, I wouldn't say they're teenagers, they look like they're in their 20s, right? They
Yeah.
decide to steal his personal ship and go joyriding. And Buck has to go bring them in, and they get to the point where they're joyriding, and then the music stops playing, and they're like, "What the fuck? What?" They start to panic, like, "We're in a spaceship, and we don't know what the fuck we're doing." And Buck is like, "Calm down, hit the button underneath underneath your seat, and let me take control. I guess it's got like a control, so you can control the ship if he loses a pilot remotely." And he controls the ship and brings him in. But that's how he opens up, and that's how he gets involved in this whole craziness.
Yeah, they're pretty freaked out. And we did talk about Richard Mole. I mean, he plays a guy called Yeret, who, but he's the lackey or assistant to a character named Lars Mangos, and he's also played by an actor that was familiar, Jerry Orbach, who I think, what was it, Law and Order that he was
Dot
on for a
dot
long time?
dot
Yeah.
dot. Yeah, matter of fact, I didn't know who it was, and it's like, Barb, I know this guy because I didn't watch Law and Order,
Yeah, I didn't really either.
but Barb always watched it. So wherever I'm like reading or whatever, I know Law and Order, I know dot dot, and I know all the cops, and I just don't get into the series. And I'm like, God damn, where have I seen this guy before? He looks so familiar, and I thought he was a talk show host at one time. I'm like, where the hell did he come from? And then Barb's like, oh, Law and Order, and I'm like, I went and confirmed it, logged in, and saw it.
And he's been on a ton of other stuff too.
Yeah, but that's what I kind of know him from. Like,
Yeah, that's probably like the thing that he was on for the longest period of time, probably. But like he'd done going back to obviously a while back, like he was on tons of different TV shows and stuff. So he's got one of those faces that most people recognize, maybe not know his name, you know. But so there's this guy named Tarkus who was trying to send messages back to Earth. Kind of jumps into things as his investigation is already going on, where he's looking into this issue, but he doesn't get to send a full message before he's taken out by Lars and Yeret.
hello. There's Skype going out. Hello.
Hello.
I lost you.
Yeah, that was weird. It
Yeah,
took a while to actually drop the call.
I thought we were gonna go I thought it was gonna come back, 'cause sometimes it comes back.
Yeah, I thought we were gonna make a whole episode without.
Yeah, without a disconnect.
I even plugged the Ethernet cable into my laptop just
Maybe it's on my end. I don't
try to
know.
help. I don't know.
I don't have bad signal. It says
Yeah.
quality of signal's high.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Oh
All I see is Mockingbird.
well. Well, yeah, so what I was saying was just that this guy named Tarkus is taken out by Lars and Yeret and isn't able to send a complete report back on Andromeda to Earth. And then I wrote down that there's this little scene where Buck is being told about Andromeda and their popularity. He says, "Oh yeah, kind of like the Beatles." And Aaron Gray or somebody says, "The Who?" And he says, "No, not the Who, the Beatles."
That was awesome. I like that.
Yeah,
The
so
who?
that was a little joke there. But so yeah, they on Earth they know about this phenomenon of Andromeda being popular, but something's going on with wherever Andromeda happens to be touring, wherever they do a show. They don't know if there's necessarily a connection, but they suspect that there might be because there's all this chaos that breaks out. Basically, anytime Andromeda plays, like the same footage is repeated of people smashing shelving and stuff. And like you said, a couple kids are going crazy, fighting, breaking stuff, and two kids steal Buck's starfighter.
Yeah.
But as soon as the band stops playing, people go back to normal.
And that guy, Lars, he has a female like girlfriend named Karina. She came across as really dingy. Like her voice and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I was like, man, that's just weird. Is she on drugs or something? But she came across like as like she was forcefully playing a dumb blonde. Did you
Yeah,
get
she's
that?
got
Did you
that.
get that too?
Yeah,
It
and I don't
was
know if it
weird.
was the actress or if that's how the character is supposed to be, but
Yeah, I looked her up because she looked familiar too, but she was in a soap opera.
yeah.
All another world. She was a
Yeah,
villainess in another world.
I
And
didn't see
I
too
didn't
much that
watch
she
too
was in.
much. She also played somebody in All My Children. And that's probably where I know her from. And that's scary to say that, but my grandmother used to babysit us while my mom was at work, and I used to have to watch All My Children, even though I didn't have to watch it. I would sit there and play, but All My Children was on in the background. That's probably where I saw it.
Yeah, she didn't look familiar to me at all, but like you said, she had a real like high-pitched baby voice.
Yeah, she was in The Nanny, as Fran's cousin. And I could see that because
Oh, really?
She has that weird annoying, you know, the nanny always had that annoying voice, but so did
Yeah.
she. She had like the dingy voice. So go together. But so he's trying to uncover this. So Lars actually says, "Hey baby, do you love me? Do you love me?" And she's like, "Yes, I love you, Lars. Can we be with each other and do stuff?" And she said, "He says, I need you to go undercover. I need you to hit on Buck Rogers for me." And that's already weird to send your girlfriend to go hit on somebody.
Yeah.
And she goes over there to talk to Buck, and it starts off normal, but then they have this weird device that they plug into this machine. And then music starts playing as she's there with Buck, and she gets like real like, "Buck, hug me. I want to just be with you. Hug me." And Buck's like, "I'll hug you." And then as soon as they start playing the music, she grabs this like knife or blade or whatever you want to say, call it, and it's like a syringe, like she's gonna inject him with something, and looks like she's gonna hit him in the back with it, and then he gets control, and he's like, "What are you trying to do? You're trying to kill me." And the music stops, and she's like, "What the fuck? What was I doing?" And then he's like, "You need to get out of here. You need to leave this place." And he's, "What about Lars? I love Lars." And he essentially gets his, "No, go to the spaceport and go to Earth." So that I think that's the last we saw of her, but he sends her to Earth to be protected, because
Yeah.
Lars doesn't give a shit about her. She was just her like his sexual toy.
Yeah, and to use her just for things like throwing her at Buck and stuff.
But I did like the fact that the band, they had these devices around their necks, like some kind of like crystal or something, and it wouldn't affect it. And they were oblivious to the fact that every time they played, all their fans would destroy shit. You know, they didn't know. And then they say, Buck's like, "Let's go confront him," and she goes, "No, we should go do it." They convince Buck that they can go talk to Lars, and sure enough, they go talk to Lars, and Lars is like, "Fuck that. Guards, come in here and arrest
Yeah.
these fuckers. I want to kill
'Cause
you guys later. I have plenty of video footage of you guys. I don't give a shit."
yeah. 'Cause at this point, up until this point, he's been super like, he's like the definition of the, sleazy band agent. He's just kind of like, oh, amazing, love you guys, you're the best, and they just have no clue. They're totally, they don't know what's going on, and they can't really suspect that Lars would be the bad guy that Buck is saying that he is, but he doesn't even try to put on airs, like you said. He doesn't even try to deny it. He's like, yep. And he locks him up.
Did you happen to notice that one of the band's member's name was Rambo?
They had all weird names. But it was spelled like the French Rambo.
Yeah, Rambo, but he said it like Rambo.
Yeah. Yeah, they had interesting names. And I think the it's the one woman and two guys, and I think the female member of the group, I think she was a soap opera actress too.
Maybe I got them confused. Was Joanna the dingy one?
Yeah, I think so. 'Cause I
Okay,
think
so
the
the one the biography I gave was for the rock star girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I got them confused. She was That's where I knew the
Maybe.
dingy one from. She was on the Love Boat and Night Court, son of a bitch. At Charlie's Angels, yeah, I've watched a lot. That's why I know her.
Maybe
The
Nightcore is actually the unofficial sequel. It's like the unofficial third season of Buck Rogers.
No, she was in a lot of shows that I watched. The Love Boat. I used to love to watch The Love Boat. She was on Happy Days. I watched Happy Days. She was on Night Court. She was on Charlie's Angels. She was on Vegas. BJ and the Bear. Knight Rider, The A-Team, I mean, all the shows, The Fall Guy, Alf.
Holy cow.
I watched all this shit. That's why she. Okay,
I've
so
seen some of that
the
stuff too.
biography that I gave was for the musician girl.
Oh, okay.
Got it confused. Judy Landers is the one that plays the dingy one. And
Gotcha.
she had, that's why she sounds from, like, I knew her voice. She always had a weird voice. Like, it's like mousy, isn't it? Like, I don't
Yeah,
know. It's so
mousy, definitely.
bizarre.
Hi, Brock. No, that doesn't sound like it. It's like I'm gonna try this, and it's not gonna happen.
Buck, I love you, Buck.
Brock.
Buck, I love you.
Well, there's a sound bite for but yeah, so Twiggy's along with them, and
Oh
Buck.
wait, I got something for you.
Oh yeah,
Just
go ahead.
because didn't was it just me or did Theopolis sound different?
I didn't notice that.
It was annoying me. His voice sounded like a high, I don't know if it's higher or lower, like a lower pitch to it. But it sounded weird. I don't know. Maybe that's a good question for David, the specialist of Buck Rogers.
Yeah, he
David,
comes in and like and makes us look respectable with his comments.
yeah, this guy, he's a he does a lot more analysis than we do, and that's what I'd
Pays us
like to get.
better, pays better attention.
I'd like to ask you, when you watch this episode, did Theopolis sound different to you? Because it kind of bugged me. I don't know. Maybe it was my hearing going out again. I don't know.
Yeah.
You didn't catch it, but
I didn't catch it, but that doesn't mean anything. Because I think last episode it was, or the one before, where he caught all the DC Comics references that were being made over the loudspeaker and the spaceport or whatever.
yeah, the only one that I caught was Pike.
Yeah. I don't even think I noticed that they were doing them. I don't know what's my, but I have a bad habit of doing two things at once.
Oh, I do too. When I'm watching that show, sometimes I'm walking around letting Harley out or something. I don't give it 100%. I give it 85% of my attention.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Why you do it like 50?
No, maybe 72.3.
Only show up when the music starts playing.
Yeah, this is the first episode I actually watched because of the rock band. But yeah, so Twiggy, like you said, Twiggy's got Theophilus with him, but Buck sends them to destroy the transmitter that's sending out the music of Andromeda with the subliminal messages and stuff. And it's good timing because he sends Twiggy away right before he gets arrested and put in the cell with Andromeda.
I like their garbage system. It's pretty big.
Yeah, somebody gets, who gets sent through it?
Oh, Twiggy.
Oh, right. Oh, well,
Tw
that's what he goes
Twi
through.
Twiggy goes in here into the initial like garbage unit because
Yeah.
it's just a bunch of like hallways, but it's too small for Buck to crawl into. So Twiggy's like, "I'll take care of it, Buck." And then he goes in there with Theopolis, and then the garbage unit turns itself on. And what it does is it's just a huge it opens up and then becomes a, and you get pushed out to the vacuum of space. You get sucked right out. And all the trash and stuff you put in there will get sucked out into space and but luckily Twiggy can, you know, grabs onto something, is able to hold on.
Yeah, because that's actually how they get rid of Tarkus earlier on in the episode.
Yeah.
They put him out there, and he does get thrown out into space. That's right. Yeah, I have like a. I think I skipped some stuff here in my notes, but Lars is planning this big event. Basically, he's gonna take things to another level where he's gonna try to really, really take control of a good portion of at least music world, or he's trying to expand his approach, his control. But because Twiggy gets to the transmitter and then Buck smashes what looks kind of like a light bulb, really. It ends up really not having any effect. So when Lars goes to throw out the commands and stuff like that, people just kind of like look at him and start laughing. All the people who, including the couple that took over the Buck's plane earlier on, just like stand there laughing at Lars, and he gets more and more upset. And I think that's kind of the end of things. That's kind of how things get wrapped up, right?
Yeah, everybody turns on Lars. They start laughing at his ass
Pretty much, yeah.
because he comes on. He still thinks they're under control. He comes over the loudspeaker and he's like, "Join me, and we will bring the universe down on its knees.
Yeah.
Let's
He's pouring
go,
out pretty
people!" And he's
thick.
like, "Go, go!" And everybody's just watching him. Who's this crazy loon telling us to go destroy stuff?
Yep.
They think it's humorous.
Yeah, they just laugh at him like, what the hell is going on with this guy?
And then it kind of ends with those guys rocking out again.
Yeah, they're racking out, but without any worry of causing people to go crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty cool
But
because they have weird percussion. Like, they have one of the guys is like hitting these, like, I don't know, these little things that stick out of like a keyboard, it looks like. And it's like the percussion, and then somebody's like playing the synthesizer or, keyboard, and then the other one's on guitar.
yeah, well, the one synthesizer, there's no keys. It's just like a bank of colored circles.
Yeah, it's like Simple Simon, if you ever played that game.
Yeah. Yeah, he just like touches different circles and even like swipes his leg across them earlier on in the opening performance. And yeah, the other dude, his thing has like little glass or crystal cylinders sticking out of it that he hits with sticks.
Yeah.
I guess that they're trying to come up with some futuristic looking instruments.
Yeah, it's pretty cool episode. I enjoyed it. We're almost
Yeah,
done. We got two
it
more
was entertaining.
episodes, two-parter on the last one. But we actually are going to be done with season one here in two episodes, I think.
Yeah, we're getting there.
And then we can start season two. I saw that you bought it.
Zeroing in. Yeah, I went ahead and picked up the season two, so
I went
I got
ahead
that.
and picked up Reb Brown's Captain America.
What is that?
It's a TV show from the 70s, man. Around
Oh,
the
really?
same
There
time
was one.
the Spider-Man came out with Nicholas Hammond and Hulk came out, that they had a two episode movies of Captain America with Reb Brown, and he drives a motorcycle around.
Oh,
I
okay.
picked those up.
I think I have seen some screenshots of him on the motorcycle.
And there was a Doctor Strange movie too.
I didn't realize those were things that you could buy though.
Yeah. So we are done.
Okay.
And you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And there's a comment thing there. Nobody ever comments there, but you can. It works. I tried it. And then
It's still working.
our Facebook page is at Geek Brunch Podcast, and then we get more activity there thanks to David, who's always letting us know cool stuff that we miss on the episodes,
Yeah.
especially like the names that were broadcast over the PA. I didn't capture those,
Yeah, he's got a good attention to detail
and
and
the closed caption doesn't capture it either because I'm still deaf in one ear, so I watch them in closed caption. So they don't say like it'll say something like voice distinctively
Yeah.
plays over the intercom. It doesn't say
Cut their hole.
yeah, Carter Hall from Thanagar or anything like that. But thank you for giving us feedback. We appreciate you listening.
Absolutely.
And we love to get comments and questions or topics of discussion on the show, so you could always send us some information. You are at Mythmaking ETC when you're not
Yes.
being hacked on the Twitters.
Did you see, did you see the story I shared about the poop pills?
No, was it on Twitter or was it on Facebook?
Yeah, I shared it on Twitter.
There's
I think
poop
it was from
pills.
NPR or something. Yeah, I guess they use feces transplants to treat people who have like C. diff infections, Clostridium difficile, whatever. Because it like they take healthy people like with healthy poop, and they in the past like their only way of like was doing like a colonoscopy or something like that to
Yeah.
get the healthy poop. This is so disgusting.
And they make them eat the poop? What happens with the poop? I think I lost them again. Son of a bitch. So, Chris,
God damn
they make them eat the poop?
Skype said, "Stop talking about poop, you disgusting man."
What do they make them do with the poop?
They put the poop into their body. They don't make them eat it, but they put it in like
Because it's bacteria, good bacterias and
good
stuff, or
bacteria. Yeah, because they actually found it's really effective.
how do
Like
they inject it? Do they put it in
they use
your
an
sphincter?
endoscope. They use an endoscope, yeah, through your sphincter. So it's like
So they actually
reverse.
shoot poop into your intestines.
They put poop into you instead of putting if it coming out, and I guess it helps these people, but obviously that's not like the most ideal. Like they're trying to find a less like
Evasive, like,
invasive.
why are
Yeah,
you putting that guy's shit up my ass?
they even like did like a scope like down the person's throat, which is just like so nasty, because there's like a risk of like rupture, and then like somebody could potentially inhale. Yeah, but so they came up with these frozen poop pills, and they wanted to make them so that you couldn't see the insides of what's in. You couldn't see that there's poop in there, but like they had to make them acid resistant because people had to swallow them, and the only kind of like pills there are transparent, so they do look brown. And you can see that there's frozen poop inside these pills. But the people took the pills, like they swallowed these poop pills. They don't taste like anything because the poop's inside of the capsule. But then it dissolves in your stomach and the poop gets in your intestines, and it worked. It healed these people. It like totally got rid of the infection.
That's weird.
But they had to
Science.
swallow poop pills.
Do you have
So
healthy poop because you don't eat meat?
I think I have pretty healthy poop, yeah.
Why don't you
Maybe I should
like
make
donate
some.
your poop?
Yeah, I should make some pills. That could be a retrocast contest.
Yeah.
Win
You
frozen
could
poop.
win some of Chris's poop
Frozen poop.
and it'll prevent. I
That
don't
sounds like.
know.
I bet you your wife knows about this. That sounds like one
You
of those
think
things
my
that she.
wife would know about this? I don't
Yeah.
think she would. I
But
don't
she
think
likes all
she.
that gross
She
biology
does
stuff. She
like
posts
that
all that.
fuck the science kind of thing.
Yeah, she's grossed me out a few times with her Facebook posts. It's like
Yeah.
some like insect coming out of somebody's eyeball or something.
Email at mythmakingetc@gmail.com. And I'm at mike@comicbooknoise.com. I don't know what else we have. I think that's everything. I already
Have a
said the
cat on my
Facebook. You
lap.
have a cat, the cat in your hat?
Like the cat's on my lap, and I have to pee, so it's not helping.
Right, on that note,
It's not good for your bladder.
we will go pee as he goes and generates some poop for our listeners for
I'm gonna
the
go
next
pee and
episode.
then start working on our prizes.
All right. I'll talk
Right.
to you in a while. Take care.
Adios, Eagle.
Bye-bye.